From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection is being made as Democratic voters throughout our community prepare for primary day on June 22nd. Their ballots will include a section listing 16 candidates for Rochester City Council. Those candidates are vying for five at-large seats. Over the last several weeks, we've talked to nearly all of the candidates about their ideas for policies that would affect and possibly change Rochester. Yes, policing, but also economic development and inequality, public transportation, and more. It's an opportunity for you to hear the candidates at length so you can make informed decisions when you vote. This hour, we're talking with one of the candidates. I'd like to welcome Leticia Stasio, who is an attorney, former Rochester City Court judge, and activist. Leticia, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And a quick note regarding the candidates for City Council. We invited all of them to participate in these conversations in recent weeks. Names were drawn essentially from a hat to determine the orders of which they'd appear. Incumbent Willie Lightfoot declined multiple invitations to join us, as is his right. Patricia Williams McGahee was also scheduled to participate today, but canceled her appearance yesterday. You can find all of the interviews with not only Ms. Stasio, but the other candidates that have already been done on our website, wxxinews.org/connections. Leticia, why is this a position that you want? We've been asking all the candidates to, number one, introduce yourself a little bit for listeners who may not know you, and to tell us why this is a position that you want to serve in.
All right. My name is Leticia Stasio, and I am a lifelong resident of the city of Rochester. I am probably most well known as being a Rochester City Court judge here. I also previously was a prosecutor, and I am currently a defense attorney. In addition to working as a defense attorney, I have a master's in social work. I don't practice social work, but I think it shaped a lot of my ideologies and policies about the way things should be done. And generally, like any time I've run for office, I am interested because I see a niche of the community that is not being properly represented, or a need that needs to be filled. And either I think that there are not sufficient people in place to fill that need, or they are alone and they don't have the strength they need in numbers to get the things done that need to be done.
We've been starting, and I think understandably to the audience, with all of the candidates for City Council on the subject of police reform. So let me just start sort of taking a look at the issue from a broad lens. What are the reforms that you would want to see City Council and the City of Rochester focus on, whether those are already in motion or those have not been accomplished yet?
Well, to be honest with you, I think one of the most frustrating things that we encounter when we talk about the police and we talk about the city and city council versus the mayor is that this is like a three-way, if not more, conversation that we pretend doesn't include the Locust Club and the union. And everybody kind of points their finger at one another. Well, city council is powerless because the mayor has to do it. The mayor can't do it because the union. So I would want to start by revisiting these contracts that apparently hamstring us into situations where we're powerless when people commit egregious acts, monstrosities of, you know, criminal actions while at work. We say, oh, there's a contract, we can't do anything. That doesn't sound like a very good answer to me. So I think police reform starts with actually looking at what we can reform, as opposed to having lip service to what we're going to change and not changing anything. I don't know what the contract doesn't allow. To be honest with you, I haven't seen the whole thing, but I do know that we recently re-entered into a contract where it seems we didn't have the power that we needed to be giving away $98 million, in my opinion.
Well, I guess, you know, I take the point that you're making that, you know, it's hard to tell who's right here when they say we don't have the power to do this. But it is interesting that, you know, the city of Rochester negotiated the most recent union contract 2 years ago and is now asking for the state to make some changes here. And some are sort of looking from the outside at this saying, hey, you negotiated the last contract. You know, you've got power when you negotiate. You don't have to say yes. How much do you think the city council, et cetera, do have the power to do from your perspective?
I think we just literally said the same exact thing. It doesn't make sense to look at a contract after the fact and say it's not fair to you when you had all of the power when you came to the table with all of the money.
Okay, that's fair. I guess City Hall would probably have a different take. But, you know, I mean, I take the point that it sounds like if you're elected to City Council, you're going to press that point and say, we do have this power. We can make this change. Yeah.
Or I can guarantee you that I'm not going to vote for us to enter into any contracts okay. where we continue to give money away to a broken system that continues to be broken in our face. You know what I mean? That's what I can say. I can say that if we don't have the power, then we're not going to continue to give funding to an area. Because guess what? We do have power over other social service type organizations that I think the money would be better off spent in anyway.
So this is a department that's got 725 officers, and we've been pointing out that according to the research we have seen, Rochester has the second highest number of police officers per capita of a city of its size in the country. Is there a right number, for lack of a better word? I mean, are you comfortable with the number of officers? Would you like to see it cut in half? Would you like to see more? I mean, is there a way of approaching this that makes you say, this is what's going to make me comfortable with the size of this department?
No, I don't think that it's something that you can numerically justify. I think that every situation is different, but I think that there's no question that we're over-policed. And I think that those numbers suggest that. And for you to say that we have the second number of officers per capita, but we're not doing so well when it comes to crime and specifically homicides, it doesn't seem like all of those officers are making us any safer. And I think that's the conversation that everybody keeps missing when you talk about defunding the police or reallocating resources. There's this constant fear mongering of, oh, my God, all the criminals are just going to kill us all. But we're not any safer. We're just more policed.
What do you think is driving the violence this year so far?
I think it's really, really simple. Poverty breeds hopelessness. And when you're hopeless, what do you care if you kill people or people who look like you? You live in a situation in which most people celebrate making it to a 21st birthday. It is not a very big accomplishment to live every day, and it is not a big deal to take someone's life over trivial things like respect when respect is the only thing you have in life.
So economic inequality is at the root of this, it sounds like. And I want to get...
And what are we doing? I'm sorry to interrupt
no,
you.
No, go ahead.
You say economic inequality, and then look at what we're doing. We're giving away PPP loans. We're giving away EIDL loans. We're giving away all of this money. And how are we paying for it? We're prosecuting people who are in poverty, who are taking advantage of government programming that the government should have been able to figure out they weren't qualified for in the first place, like unemployment insurance. Like, you know what I mean? We are going to be prosecuting so much fraud. And it seems crazy to me that, like, we came up with programs to stimulate the economy by, I don't know, I think criminalizing behavior that's not even violent.
Well, so I want to get back to economic inequality in a second. I just want to type a few things on police reform. Have you had a chance to really digest what counsel has studied through their own investigation of what happened in the Daniel Prude case when it comes to City Hall's involvement of communicating or withholding information from the public, when it comes to the former police chief, and what we do with this? I guess I'm asking, have you learned enough from that to say exactly what you think needs to be done in the wake of the killing of Daniel Prude?
I can't say that I think I learned anything from any of those studies about what needs to be done in the wake of killing of Daniel Prude. I learned from watching the video of his murder and then actually going to the community where he was killed and sitting with the people that live there and deal with it on a regular and consistent basis, that this is not something anyone was surprised by. It is not something anyone doesn't expect to see happen again. And it is what needs to be done here isn't being done. There was no justice for this family. This was a complete injustice. It was a mockery of justice, if anything. And I think that the George Floyd case proved that pretty clearly, that in Rochester, the hopeless and the poor are so hopeless and poor that they can't even have an uprising to demand justice when they are publicly killed on television. It's disgusting to me on so many levels. And I don't think anything that should have happened will happen. I don't think those officers have been fired. I don't think that they've been charged. I think that they still are policing our communities. And I think that there's somehow a debate about what happened when that man was completely naked and handcuffed and not possibly a threat to anyone.
Do you accept the mayor's explanations for why the public didn't know about it until September?
This is a very unpopular opinion with people. So I'll say this. I think that the public felt they had a right to know about this because it was a relationship with a mayor that it's like a hometown mayor that everybody knows. And I don't know that I think from a legal perspective, and I wear two different hats there, the mayor had a duty to disclose an ongoing investigation to the public. I don't know that I think as an attorney, she had that duty. I think that people feel morally and personally like they were wronged. And those are two different things.
Yeah, interesting points. I appreciate that. Leticia Estacio is our guest, an attorney, a former Rochester City Court judge, and a candidate for Rochester City Council, one of 16 names on the ballot on primary day on June 22nd for 5 at-large seats for Rochester City Council. When it comes to economic inequality, we have seen a number of proposals this spring. Mayor Warren talked about reparations. She talked about trying to make sure that when marijuana is really sort of flowing legally, and when we actually see revenue flowing, that communities of color, often communities where marijuana laws were prosecuted much more aggressively, she wants to see some of that revenue flow in that direction. I want to start by asking if you agree with the mayor on that point, and then let's talk a little bit more broadly about what you think council can do regarding economic inequality.
I absolutely believe that although we'd like to create programs and create jobs for people who have educations to come in and be kind of martyrs to save people who are poor, all of the research suggests that if you want to improve people's quality of lives and you want to take them out of poverty, you give them money. And I know that people like to decide what they get to do with money that you give them because we just have a problem minding our own business. But when you want people to do better and you want them to succeed financially, you give them money. So if we're going to say, yes, let's give poor people money to bring them out of poverty, I think that's an amazing idea. That actually makes a lot of sense. If we're going to create a program to hire people to do a study to determine how we get people out of poverty and that's going to take all the money, then no, I'm not for that idea at all.
Okay. But what else is sort of within reach for council here? I mean, how do you view council's role in addressing something that is so systemic and so entrenched in this community?
Oh, well, you just said a moment ago, for example, that the mayor was looking into reparations. I believe in Illinois, city council actually did pass a referendum allowing reparations for 13% of the revenue that was generated from legal marijuana sales to go to providing reparations to the people there. I think that's an amazing idea. I think that it's one thing to say that Black and brown people have been significantly disadvantaged and, you know, disenfranchised, and we're really sad about it. We're going to stop now. It's a lot more difficult to say, wait, we're going to make up. We're going to close the gap. We're going to actually do the work to put things back there. So I think both of the things that you said are things that are possible. That's an intertwinement of them. And I think that city council specifically gets to determine things like that, the laws and how, where money is going to be spent with respect to the city. So I think that we should definitely earmark the programming. You know, I've heard a lot of rumors about the legalization of marijuana, and I know a lot of people are terrified because they're saying an application is $250,000. And I don't know if that's true, but I appreciate there being some effort to attract people who have previously been prosecuted and are still being prosecuted. Mm-hmm. I have a client right now who's looking at going to state prison over a marijuana offense.
Yeah. Can you give us a little bit more of what you have seen in the legal system, given your work as an attorney, given the fact that you've been a judge? You know, for listeners who hear that things have been imbalanced or that prosecution has been racist, what can you offer listeners who maybe only hear that but haven't understood what that has meant in this country and in this community?
I think that people fail to realize when they're being very law and order that a very big portion of the law is your discretion. So a police officer may see a person with marijuana and decide to completely look the other way or to leave them alone or to give them a ticket versus determining this person with marijuana is a dangerous person, so I'm going to search their vehicle or, you know, their pockets. Or, and this is where we get kind of turned off, I think, in America, because if the police officer is giving you some preferential treatment, right, by seeing you with marijuana and letting you go, then we don't like to acknowledge that when he doesn't let the other person go, even if he finds a gun or even if he finds other drugs, you got a preference there because you could have had those things too. You know what I mean? And so we start to get away from that argument. But what happens often is the police use marijuana as a pretextual reason to stop someone, whether they're walking and or driving, and generally walking down the street, smoking what would be referred to as a blunt, would have been a B misdemeanor in Rochester. Well, how does that impact people who are in poverty versus people who aren't? You're more likely to be driving if you aren't poor. You know, just very subtle things like that. It is very unlikely that you're going to get an arrest for UPM, unlawful possession of marijuana, in the suburbs unless it's accompanied with several other offenses. Whereas in the city, you'll get an arrest like that all the time because they're not looking for UPM. So now my clients can't get arrested for UPM. And that's a pretty big deal because that's one of those things like Bell on Bike, you know, that nobody ever really gets stopped for, but it's illegal. And if you get stopped, the police have very wide discretion of how much they're going to search you or what they're going to ultimately charge you with, depending on how you respond. Having said that, I live around the corner from the dispensary at Kodak, and my client is looking at going to prison for selling less drugs than they sell legally daily. I don't understand how that makes sense in this society at all.
Yeah, I mean, we did hear recently some local activists who were saying that if this state is going to legalize recreational marijuana, and that has happened, then shouldn't we have city leadership saying to police essentially, hey, that's it, like, stand
well,
down on this?
Shouldn't we have the kind of head honcho of law enforcement saying we're not going to prosecute these cases anymore?
Sure.
If we're not, then...
Anyway, it sounds to me like that's not happening. Is that correct?
That is not happening. I literally have a case right now where my client is looking at a potential state prison sentence for allegedly not even selling, possessing marijuana currently right now. And I can't fathom a system in which that sounds like justice.
Yeah, it certainly does sound bizarre. Well, I mean, I don't mean to sort of go off on a tangent. It would be bizarre if not for how common that sort of scenario has been in this country. But I understand the frustration. And so, you know, when we now look forward on the legalization of marijuana, when we think about all of the change that's happening, you know, what would be the mistake, Leticia Estacio? What would be, if this state and this community fail on this issue, what does failure look like?
I think that there's a huge opportunity here, and I think it's an important opportunity to start healing some of the damage that has happened in this country over the last several years. And a lot of that damage comes from a difference in perception. There is a large segment of the population that sees things one way, and there is a segment of the population that sees things in a very different way. The problem is that my perception creates my reality. So if you continually ignore my perception, it's ultimately going to be to your detriment if I perceive that you're treating me badly. There's an opportunity here for America to acknowledge the injustice that it has constantly perpetuated against Black and brown people, and to actually acknowledge it, not to pretend like they always do, but to say, hey, wait a minute, this was wrong. This was really wrong, and we still do it. And we have an opportunity to acknowledge the wrong and to fix it, and to say we're going to actively pour back into communities that we actively destroyed. We're going to put at least as much energy into restructuring and restoring a community that we did into tearing it down, because the research shows us now that we were wrong in the first place. And you can't give people back their lives. You can't even in this case give them back their clean records, but you can try to undo some of the damage that you've done to their lineage and their children. And I think that this is an opportunity to do that, to say there are people whose lives have been ruined. And at least to some extent, you're right. That was because we have a completely racist criminal justice system, and we're going to actually take steps to change that in this country, not just pay lip service to it.
You and I don't live that far apart, and we probably have heard plenty of ATVs, dirt bikes in the area. You know, and so tomorrow on this program, we're going to be talking about this issue. And in fact, we're going to be talking to some of the young men who ride and have told us that they are looking for a place to ride and think that this is often misunderstood. It looks like we're seeing a lot of movement in the way of either law enforcement being more aggressive or legislation on local, county, state levels. What do you think the city of Rochester should do about this?
I think we should cut it out. We have to stop making people's annoying behavior illegal. Like, I don't understand. When someone does something I don't like, I don't call the police. That is not the way to resolve disputes. I completely get it. I hate the dirt bikes. Guys, last night, my neighbors, I don't even know what they did, but it was around 2 o'clock in the morning and I was ready to kill my own. I was so frustrated. I don't like, I walk on the trails. I don't like when they almost run me over. I think that we stop, though, continuing to create this divide. You have to have conversations. I think people are terrified of everyone now. Everybody's scared to talk to everybody. Everybody thinks everybody's a psychopath. And like, there's plenty of crazy people out here, but everyone's not insane. When people in my neighborhood bother me, yesterday, I have a perfect example. This is not a dirt bike example. We were going to Nino's. There was a man who was talking to himself, and I saw a man in a store that was looking at him, and it was a black man, and the guy that was looking at him was a white man, and he had his phone in his hand, and he was going to call the police. You could tell he was uncomfortable, and he was uncomfortable because this guy was standing near the entrance of his store, and he didn't know what he was doing, and he looked a little homeless. And I got out of my car. I put on a mask. I brought him a mask and said, hey, you're looking a little creepy. Are you okay? Do you need help? You look suspicious. And he said, oh, I said, that guy right there is watching you. He turned around. He saw the guy and he said, oh my goodness, he is watching me. I have problems with him. I'm just going to go in the house. Why can't we talk to each other anymore? Why do we have to call the police for every, like, the police are here supposedly to stop like real violent crime from happening. They're not here because your neighbor has a dirt bike. And I have a real problem with you, if you know that when you call the police on black and brown people, it can lead to their death, you think that you being inconvenienced by the sound of a dirt bike is worthy of their life being ended because that's illegal. That's problematic. And you really need to examine how important black lives are to you if that's how you resolve that kind of dispute.
Last question I want to ask you is on the subject of guns. A lot of listeners have had questions about gun policy in the city and if there's any place for city council to do anything regarding guns. Much of the violence and certainly the vast majority of the deaths we've seen this year is as the result of gunfire. Is there anything that you would work on if you're elected to Rochester City Council in regards to guns in Rochester?
I think that it would be beneficial if we had more drives where people were allowed to drop off guns, but only if we had people that they actually trusted to, you know, advise them and to not prosecute them in those situations. But more importantly than dealing with the guns, I think you have to deal with the kids. I think that it's really important that everybody in Rochester get to our kids while we can so that we can save them before it's too late. Our kids are feeling hopeless and angry and not listened to and unappreciated. And, you know, like they have nowhere to turn and they have nothing to do. So that's what you have to change. Guns are just, the violence is just a symptom of the underlying problem. These kids don't have any hope.
And I will, I'll give you the floor to do two things. Let people know where to find you if they want to look you up online. And, you know, I know time moves quickly. And so if there are other issues that really are driving this candidacy that we didn't get to, I want to give you a minute to talk about that too. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, guys, if you are on social media, I believe my handle at all of my social media platforms is at DAJUDGE33. The judge 33. It's kind of funny. I was a judge for a short period of time, and I was always uncomfortable being called the judge. And then after I was no longer a judge, everyone in Rochester literally calls me the judge, no matter what. So I've just
they see you in public and they call you judge.
Oh, everyone, literally, even when I'm in court. And it's so weird because when you're a former judge, everyone calls you judge forever. But because of how my situation went down, it's a little awkward. So then they feel embarrassed. But deputies, court staff, everyone in Rochester calls me the judge. So that's how that name came about. If you want to find me on social media, you'll find more of my perspectives on most everything. Why I'm running? I guess I'm running, like I said, because I think that there are things that need to change here. And I think that we need people who are willing to do the work and not necessarily be popular or be friendly with politicians or be in the in club and actually do the work. I think that there's no question that that's who I am. You may not like me, but you probably think I'm telling the truth. That's generally what I give you, my perspective. And if you don't like that, that's okay. I'm here to offer a perspective that isn't always available. Like I said before, there's a large segment of the population that doesn't get a voice, especially not in Rochester politics. And that's the section I come from. That's the section I've always represented. That's the section I always intend to represent. There's no tax bracket I can be in that changes where my loyalty lies with respect to this community. So I think that that is a community that is often overlooked and undervalued, underappreciated, and one that people make a lot of money off of, but don't ever actually invite to be a part of that process.
Leticia Stasio is running for Rochester City Council. She's one of 16 candidates on the ballot on June 22nd for 5 at-large seats. And you have now heard the full slate of interviews with the candidates who said yes to our invitations to join us on this program on Wednesdays, dating back a number of weeks now. We hope that you are better informed listeners. And Leticia, thanks for making time for the program. I hope we can talk again.
No problem. Good to talk to you as always.
Leticia Stasio. Once again, I want to alert listeners. We're going to, it's always sort of cataloged out right there online on the connections page. It's wxxinews.org/connections. You find podcasts, and it's easy to search for and collect this set of interviews with the candidates for city council. Let's all be better informed voters whenever we vote. And let's take this break and come right back on Connections.